Hello, it is time to read from the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, November 26, 2022. My name is John Reef, and I'll be bringing you the news today. Here's a look at what we'll be reading. We'll start with the weather, then do the mini editorial, then the front page for those stories, and then moving to the inside pages for more stories of local interest. At the 30-minute mark, the obituaries, and then the sports and feature stories as time allows. We'll wrap up with Dear Abby and the weather one more time. Forecast today, mild with some high clouds, a high of 56 degrees, winds south-southwest at 8 to 16 miles an hour. Going to be a really beautiful day. Breezy with increasing clouds tonight, low of 29, winds north at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Sunny, breezy, a little cooler on Sunday, but still not bad, a high of 44, winds northwest at 10 to 20 miles an hour for tomorrow. Clear skies on Sunday night, low down to 22, breezy in the morning, and then partly sunny the rest of the day, a high Monday of 53 degrees, wind south at 8 to 16. Low down to 33 degrees under mostly cloudy skies Monday night, and then on Tuesday, cloudy, windy, and getting quite a bit cooler, a high of 35 degrees, and winds north-northwest at 15 to 25 miles an hour. That's a good day to stay inside. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy skies, low of 17 and cooler. Clouds and sun mixed up on Wednesday, a high only 29 degrees, stay inside that day too. West-northwest winds at 10 to 20 miles an hour for your Wednesday. Mini editorial today is from somebody named Roger L. Wilson, W-I-L-S-O-N, of Mobile, Iowa. Roger L. Wilson writes as follows, "The Democrats and liberal media continue to call the January 6th situation at the U.S. Capitol an insurrection. After many arrests, how many people have been charged with insurrection? None." Again, that from Roger L. Wilson of Millville, Iowa. Front page on, our top story on the front page, we'll start with this one. "A Year to Remember," this is by Nick Heitrek. It's called "A Year to Remember, Much to be Thankful for at Elk Point Jefferson." This dateline, Elk Point, South Dakota. "When families in Elk Point and Jefferson sat down for Thanksgiving dinner this weekend, it shouldn't have been too hard to list for things for which to be thankful. It's likely they had a hard time remembering them at all. It would have been easy to leave something out, considering Elk Point Jefferson's high school's run of success this fall, the likes of which has never been seen here before. There hasn't been anything even close. The climate has been pretty electric this year," said Justin Clerks, activities director and middle school social studies teacher who's been with the district for 25 years. "Most journal readers are probably familiar with the exploits of the football team, which won the school's first ever state championship with a 21-14 win over two-time defending state champion winner on November 11th, and the volleyball team, which last week finished third at the state volleyball tournament. While those two teams were heading into the postseason, Elk Point Jefferson athletes Joe Cross, 9th place, and Carter Langle, 14th, medaled at the state cross-country and golf meets, respectively. In addition to the sports success, the marching band continued its strong tradition and won three competitions. And the Reader's Theater Group qualified for the State Oral Interpretation Festival. Someone told me we've gone to state in just about everything we participated in, said Caleb Niles, a senior tackle on the football team who also plays trumpet in band and is a member of the Reader's Theater Group. Yes, it's been an enjoyable fall for the 210-member student body, the staff, and community. When you're doing good in almost everything you're doing, it's hard not to be chipper, said Niles, who's also president of the school's student council and National Honor Society chapter. It's made going to school, Dare Niles and his friends say, fun. Everyone's been so happy because of all of our success, of all our sports and our activities too, said Alyssa Chitka, a senior libero on the volleyball team, who's also on student council and in the National Honor Society. That excitement hasn't been contained to only the school building. As teams progressed through their seasons, crowds at their games grew larger and larger. That community support has been vital to the students' success, said senior Benjamin Swatek, a running back and linebacker on the football team and another National Honor Society member. I am definitely thankful for our community support, Swatek said. I am just proud of our school. That pride is evident when looking at the student section during games. If it's football, volleyball team members are there, and vice versa. No matter what sport or activity students are in, they're showing up to cheer for their classmates and friends. We're each other's biggest supporters, Swatek said. I think we all kind of inspire each other to be successful. It makes sense. When one team or group is successful, members of the others want to do well too. Case in point, as the football team advanced through the playoffs, the volleyball team got on a roll in the postseason to qualify for the state tournament. The Huskies entered as the number 8 seed and knocked off top-seeded Wagner in the first round, lost to eventual champion Sioux Falls Christian in the semifinals, and then beat number 2 seed Miller in the consolation finals. Seeing the football team's success made us want to achieve our own success, Chitka said. The success has been no fluke, said Skylar Erickson, the middle/high school principal. The senior class is full of hardworking leaders, setting a good example for underclassmen. It's just nice to see all the work they put in come to fruition, Erickson said. The success flows from one activity to another because many of the same students are in all of them. As is often the case in smaller schools, many students are involved in several sports and fine arts activities throughout the year. It's no surprise to see a number of football and volleyball players also in the band. You see a lot of the same names involved, Clerk said. As they prepared for a few well-earned days off before the Thanksgiving break, Swatek, Chitka, and Niles gave thanks for their teachers, coaches, and parents for playing vital roles in their success. Through all the wins and achievements, they've formed close bonds with teammates and other students, relationships they'll always be thankful for. They're thankful to be a part of something this special, a time they can look back on and celebrate when they return after graduation to watch future teams competing and, they hope, winning. I hope it continues, Chitka said. Thanks to their hard work and the support students here receive, it appears there's a good chance of that. It shows a picture on page A2 of Alyssa Chitka Center, or Chitka Center, the libero on the Elk Point Jefferson volleyball team that finished third at the state tournament. And she's talking about the team's success alongside Caleb Niles and Benjamin Swatek, who were members of the school's state championship football team this fall. Niles is also a member of the school's marching band, which won 3 competitions, and the Reader's Theater Group that qualified for state. On the front page, it has another picture of the student-athletes Caleb Niles, Benjamin Swatek, and Alyssa Chitka holding trophies for state football and state volleyball at Elk Point Jefferson High School in Elk Point, South Dakota. In addition to those two teams' success this fall, Elk Point Jefferson students won medals at state, cross-country, and golf. The band won 3 marching competitions, and the Reader's Theater Group qualified for state. Next story on the front page, inflation hovers over shoppers seeking deals on Black Friday. Cautious shoppers hunted for the best deals at stores and online as retailers offered new Black Friday discounts to entice consumers eager to start buying holiday gifts but weighed down by inflation. Due to elevated prices for food, rent, gasoline, and other essentials, many people were being more selective, reluctant to spend unless there was a big sale. Some dipped more into savings, turning to buy now, pay later services that allow payment in installments or running up their credit cards at a time when the Federal Reserve is hiking interest rates to cool the U.S. economy. Sheila Diggs, 55, went to a Walmart in Mount Airy, Maryland early Friday looking for a deal on a coffee maker. To save money this year, she said the adults in her family are drawing names and selecting one person to shop for. Everything's going up but your paycheck, said Diggs, who manages medical records at a hospital. This year's trends are a contrast from a year ago when consumers were buying early for fear of not getting what they needed amid supply network clogs. Early shopping turned out to be a fleeting trend, said Rob Garf, vice president and general manager of retail at Salesforce, which tracks online sales. People this year were holding out for the best bargains, and retailers responded this week with more attractive online deals after offering mostly lackluster discounts earlier in the season. The average discount rate in the U.S. across all categories online was 31% on Thanksgiving, up from 27% the previous year, according to Salesforce data. The steepest discounts were in home appliances, general apparel, makeup, and luxury handbags. Macy's Herald Square in Manhattan, where discounts included 50% off fashion jewelry and 50% off select shoes, was bustling with shoppers early Friday. The traffic was, quote, unquote, significantly larger on Black Friday compared to the previous 2 years because shoppers feel more comfortable in crowds, Macy's CEO Jeff Gennette said. He said bestsellers from Macy's online sale, which started last weekend, included 50% off beauty sets. Last year, Macy's, like many other stores, had supply chain issues and some of the gifts didn't arrive until after Christmas. Quote, right now we are set and ready to go, end quote, he said. Customer traffic was also higher than last year at Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota, according to Jill Renslow, executive vice president of business development of the shopping center. She said 10,000 people were at the sprawling mall during the first hour after the 7 a.m. opening, though inflation prompted many shoppers to figure out what to buy before showing up. Quote, with the economy, people are planning a little more, end quote, she said. Delmarie Quinones, 30, went to a Best Buy in Manhattan to pick up a laptop and printer she ordered online at $179, down from $379. The health home aid said higher prices on food and other expenses are making her reduce her spending from a year ago when she had money from government child tax credit payments. Quote, I can't get what I used to get, end quote, said the mother of five children, ages 1 to 13. Quoting again, even when it was back to school, getting them essentials was difficult, end quote. Major retailers, including Walmart and Target, stuck with their COVID-19 era decision to close stores on Thanksgiving Day, moving away from doorbusters and instead pushing discounts on their websites. But people were still shopping on Thanksgiving online. Garf said Salesforce data showed online sales spiked in the evening during the holiday this year, suggesting people went from feasting to shopping. And with the holiday travel up, he said a greater share of online shopping occurred on mobile devices this year. Quote, the mobile phone has become the remote control of our daily lives, and this led to an increase in shopping on the couch as consumers settled in after Thanksgiving dinner, end quote, Garf said. All right, taking a look at the third item on the front page, it's from the Mr. Goodfellow. The goal this year is $135,000. The 2021 little yellow dog is named Yukon, and you can mail checks to Mr. Goodfellow Charities, care of the Sioux City Journal, 515 Pavonia Street, Sioux City, Iowa, 51101. The Goodfellow Charity each year raises money to provide toys and books for Siouxland children during the holidays. The donor for today is International Association of Firefighters Local Number 7. Donation amount is $1,000. And about the donor, the Sioux City Professional Firefighters Association represents 104 members as Local 7 of the International Association of Firefighters. Local 7 is a nonprofit organization established to provide leadership, representation, and protection to the Suppression Division of Sioux City Fire Rescue. Again, it's the International Association of Firefighters Local 7 donating $1,000 to the Mr. Goodfellow Charities. Moving now to page A2, Walmart shooter left death note, bought gun, day of killing. This is Dateline Chesapeake, Virginia. The Walmart supervisor who fatally shot six co-workers at a store in Virginia bought the gun just hours before the killings and left a note on his phone accusing colleagues of mocking him, authorities said Friday. Quote, sorry, everyone, but I did not plan this. I promise things just fell in place like I was led by the Satan, end quote. Andre Bing wrote in a note left on his phone, the Chesapeake Police Department said Friday. Police said the 9mm handgun used in Tuesday night's shooting was legally purchased that morning, and Bing had no criminal record. They released a copy of the note found on his phone that appeared to redact the names of specific people he mentioned. It was not clear when the note was written, but in it, Bing claimed he was harassed and said he was pushed to the brink by a perception his phone was hacked. He wrote, quote, my only wish would have been to start over from scratch and that my parents would have paid closer attention to my social deficits, end quote. Bing died of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound at the scene. Co-workers who survived the shooting said Bing was difficult and known for being hostile with employees. One survivor said Bing seemed to target people and fired at some victims after they were already hit. Jessica Wilzewski said workers were gathered in a store break room to begin their overnight shift late Tuesday when Bing, a team leader, entered and opened fire. While another witness described Bing as shooting wildly, Wazuski said she observed him to target certain people. Quote, the way he was acting, he was going hunting, end quote, Wazuski told the Associated Press on Thursday. Continuing her quote, the way he was looking at people's faces and the way he did what he did, he was picking people out, end quote. Wazuski said she had worked at the store for only 5 days and being a new employee may have been the reason she was spared. She said she was hiding under a table after the shooting started, and at one point, Bing told her to get out from under the table. When he saw who she was, he told her, quote, Jesse, go home, end quote. Former co-workers and residents of Chesapeake, a city of about 250,000 people near Virginia's coast, must have been struggling to make sense of the rampage. Bing's death note rambles at times through 11 paragraphs with references to non-traditional cancer treatments and songwriting. He said people unfairly compared him to serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer and wrote, quote, I would have never killed anyone who entered my home, end quote. And he wished for a wife but wrote he didn't deserve one. Some who worked with Bing, 31, said he had a reputation for being an aggressive, if not hostile, supervisor who once admitted to having, quote, unquote, anger issues. But he also could make people laugh and seemed to be dealing with the typical stresses at work that many people endure. Quote, I don't think he had many people to fall back on in his personal life, end quote, said Nathan Sinclair, who worked at the Walmart for nearly a year before leaving earlier this month. During chats among co-workers, quote, we would be like, work is consuming my life. And Bing would be like, yeah, I don't have a social life anyway, end quote, Sinclair recalled Thursday. Sinclair said he and Bing did not get along. Bing was known for being, quote, unquote, verbally hostile to employees and wasn't particularly well-liked. But Sinclair also said there were times Bing was made fun of. Police have identified the victims as Brian Pendleton, 38, Kelly Pyle, 52, Lorenzo Gamble, 43, Randy Blevins, 70, and Fernando Chavez Barron, 16, who are all from Chesapeake, and Tanika Johnson, 22, of nearby Portsmouth. Chavez Barron's name was released Friday. It had been withheld previously because of his age. Two others who were shot remained hospitalized, police said Friday. One was still in critical condition and the other was in fair to improving condition. Six people were wounded in the shooting, which happened just after 10 p.m. as shoppers were stocking up ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday. Police said they believe about 50 people were in the store at that time. Bing was identified as an overnight team leader who had been a Walmart employee since 2010. Police said he had one handgun and several magazines of ammunition. Walmart employee Brianna Tyler said the overnight stocking team of 15 to 20 people had just gathered in the break room to go over the morning plan. Another team leader had begun speaking when Bing entered the room and opened fire, Tyler and Wazuski said. The attack was the second major shooting in Virginia this month. Three University of Virginia football players were fatally shot on a bus November 13th as they returned from a field trip. Two other students were wounded. The Walmart shooting also came days after a person opened fire at a gay nightclub in Colorado Springs, Colorado, killing five people and wounding 17. Tuesday night's shooting brought back memories of another attack at a Walmart in 2019 when a gunman killed 23 at a store in El Paso, Texas. Also on Friday, a person suffered injuries not considered life-threatening after being shot at a Walmart in Lumberton, North Carolina, police said. Investigators described it as an isolated altercation between two people who knew each other. Shows an inset picture of Debbie and Chet Barnett placing flowers Thursday at a memorial outside of the Chesapeake, Virginia Walmart. Next story, Mercy Me to perform at the Orpheum. Grammy-nominated gospel band Mercy Me will be performing on April 1st, 2023 at the Orpheum Theater, 528 Pierce Street, as part of their Always Only Jesus tour. Since their debut in 2001, Mercy Me has garnered more than 48 number one multi-format radio singles and has had four consecutive mainstream radio hits. They've sold out venues throughout the United States and Canada, including Radio City Music Hall. Tickets will go on sale at 10 a.m. December 2nd at the Tyson Event Center's Prime Bank box office or at OrpheumLive.com. Moving now to page A3, famed Goonies house for sale in coastal Astoria, Oregon. Good news for the fans of the Goonies. The old Victorian home featured in the film is on sale at Astoria, Oregon, in Astoria, Oregon, and potential buyers are considering making it more accessible to the public. We quote, "We have a few interested parties right now," end quote, said Realtor Jordan Miller, the listing agent for the property. Continuing his quote, "It seems to be everybody's intention to be able to open up the house a little bit more and have more access," end quote. The 1896 home, with sweeping views of the Columbia River flowing into the Pacific Ocean, have been listed with an asking price of $1.7 million on Zillow, where it's described as, quote, "fully loaded with history, nostalgia, and iconic level of fame," end quote. Since the movie hit theaters in 1985, fans have flocked to the home in northwestern Oregon's historic port of Astoria. The city celebrates Goonies Day on June 7th, the film's release date, and welcomes thousands of people for the event. Owner Sandy Preston was known to have been largely welcoming to visitors, but she lived in the house full-time, and the constant crowds were a strain that prompted her at times to close it to foot traffic. After the film's 30th anniversary drew about 1,500 daily visitors in 2015, Preston posted, quote, "no trespassing," end quote, signs prohibiting tourists from walking up to the property. She reopened it to the public this past August. City officials who restricted parking in the area have long sought to mediate the tensions between residents and the fans hoping to see and photograph the location. Quote, "while the owner of this location from the Goonies is a fan of the movie and enjoys chatting with visitors making the trek to Astoria to see the film locations, as you can imagine, it gets hard having hundreds of people crowding into your personal space every single day," end quote, the Astoria Warren Chamber of Commerce wrote in August on a Facebook page they administer called Goonies Day in Astoria, Oregon. In the coming-of-age film, based on a story by Steven Spielberg and featuring a young Sean Astin, a group of friends fight to protect their homes from an expanding country club and threats of foreclosure. In the process, they discover an old treasure map that leads them on an adventure and allows them to save their Goondocks neighborhood. Astoria and its rugged coastline served as the backdrop for several well-known films from the 1980s and 1990s, including Kindergarten Cop, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. For now, potential buyers of the iconic Goonies house don't seem to want to make the house their primary residence, said listing agent Miller, suggesting it has drawn interest from people who want to make it their passion. Quote, it's kind of a fun buy, Miller said. Whomever buys this house is going to have a relatively steady stream of extremely happy people walking up outside to fulfill their childhood dreams, end quote. It shows a picture of the house featured in the Steven Spielberg film The Goonies, seen on May 24, 2001 in Astoria, Oregon. The Victorian home, built in 1896 with sweeping views of the Columbia River as it flows into the Pacific Ocean, is now for sale and has been listed with an asking price of $1.7 million. Well, what a bargain there. Moving now to the opinion page, the title of the article written by Leonard Pitts is Twitter is Elon Musk's new toy. For Christmas one year, my folks got my kid brother a tank. The thing could roll across the floor, the turret turned, and it made battle sounds. That may not sound like much, but this was 1966. Color TV was like showing fire to a caveman. So this toy was the eighth wonder of the world. And what did Keith do with it? He cut the wires. On Christmas Day yet. For reasons known only to him, the boy broke it before he, more important, before I, could even play with it. I recall all this by way of discussing another child who got another cool toy and broke it right out of the box. His name is Elon Musk, and the toy is Twitter. Granted, this comparison is unfair to my brother. He was only 5 after all. Musk is 51. His immaturity is not a function of chronological age. Last month, the world's richest child spent $44 billion to purchase Twitter. Apparently, he had not the first idea what to do with it. So he cut the wires, which is to say he made one disastrous move after another. He tried to charge celebrities and other public figures $20 for the coveted blue check mark of authenticity until now was free. Stephen King likely spoke for many when he responded with an expletive and said, They should pay me. How about $8? Musk asked hopefully. That was still a non-starter for King. It was about the principle, not the price, he said. But Musk did end up selling blue check marks for scammers and grifters who probably began masquerading as prominent people and companies. Someone tweeting the drug maker Eli Lilly falsely announced the company was giving away insulin. When the lie was revealed, Lilly's stock tanked, costing it, by some estimates, $15 billion in market cap. Its lawyers, one assumes, are straining at the leash. Meantime, Musk welcomed trolls and arsonists back to the platform. Use of the N-word promptly jumped a reported 500%. He also fired half his workforce and threatened to fire the rest unless they vowed to be extremely hardcore, whatever that means. Now Twitter is hemorrhaging workers, users, and advertisers amid fears it could implode any minute. Obviously, there was never a plan here. Musk put the same forethought into this purchase as you or I would into buying a tin of mints. Robin Williams once said that cocaine is God's way of telling you that you make too much money. But that was before the current era of obscene and performative wealth. Now, apparently, God is required to speak in a language of penis-shaped rockets, super yachts with baby yachts inside, and Twitter. It raises the question of how much wealth, how much influence over all our lives, our politics, our communications, our culture, one unselected and unaccountable individual should be allowed. Should we do away with billionaires? The question lately has been debated everywhere from the New York Times to Teen Vogue. Some argue for a confiscatory tax code that would effectively abolish the super rich. They see this as a means of defense against power that is held disproportionately and wielded capriciously. Others say it's only right that workers enjoy more of the wealth they help create. They are seductive arguments, especially now watching this rich child try to get his new toy to work as people who do 40-hour weeks and gig work on the side are visiting food pantries for Thanksgiving. Indeed, this much seems beyond dispute. When you break your toys right out of the box and you're not 5 years old, it probably means you have too many toys. And that's from Leonard Pitts on the opinion page. It shows a picture instead on the opinion page of Elon Musk, who set up a poll on Twitter to determine whether former President Donald Trump should be allowed back on the site, and Trump narrowly prevailed. Next story, abortion battle emerges in midst of Georgia's U.S. Senate runoff. The state line Atlanta. Peggy Wright was driving home when she stumbled on Republican U.S. Senate hopeful Herschel Walker holding a campaign rally in Gainesville. She pulled over and, before joining the crowd of supporters, reached into the trunk of her car for the sign she always keeps there, Vote Pro-Life. Abortion isn't just an important issue to Wright, it's the only issue, she said. That's why she'll return to her polling place to cast a ballot for Walker in the runoff. Amy Howard helped organize an Atlanta fundraiser in October for a group that helps women in the Southeast obtain abortions. A sex therapist, Howard regularly counsels women on their reproductive options and had to navigate the recent changes in Georgia's law. It's crucial, she said of abortion rights, quote, more than half the planet is women and this is about their bodily autonomy, end quote. Howard also plans to vote in the runoff for Democratic incumbent Raphael Warnock. Abortion has always engendered strong and sometimes emotional responses. Walker and Warnock are tapping into those beliefs, hoping to get Georgians back out to vote in their December 6th runoff. It helps that enforcement of Georgia's strict abortion ban has been tied up in court, casting a spotlight back on abortion in Georgia at a politically important moment. The Georgia Supreme Court on Wednesday reinstated the state's ban on abortion after roughly 6 weeks of pregnancy, abruptly ending access to later abortions that had resumed days earlier. The justices put a lower court ruling overturning the ban on hold while they consider an appeal. For both sides, the ruling makes it clear the issue is still in flux. Ever since the U.S. Supreme Court struck down constitutional protection for abortion in June, both political parties have wondered whether the decision would energize abortion rights supporters, particularly women, to vote, or would it fade away as they worried about inflation and the economy. The midterm elections held earlier this month provided a partial answer. In Georgia, an Associated Press exit poll showed 7 out of 10 voters said abortion was either the single most important factor or an important factor in their vote. Only the economy ranked higher. Quote, you saw in the midterms that people were highly motivated to make sure reproductive freedom options are preserved, end quote, said Melita Easters, executive director of Georgia Win List, which works to elect women who support abortion rights. Quote, I believe they will remain highly motivated in the runoff, end quote. Already, abortion rights supporters and opponents are pouring money into the Georgia race. Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, which donated $5,000 to Walker's general election campaign, announced it will invest at least $1 million to aid him in the runoff. Planned Parenthood Votes took the wraps off a new 15-second digital ad attacking Walker and supporting Warnock. Before the runoff, Warnock collected more than $34,000 from abortion rights political action committees such as the Planned Parenthood Action Fund and NARAL, Pro-Choice America. There are other reasons why the question of abortion resonates in the Georgia race. Quote, not only does abortion rate highly on the list of issues people are thinking about, in quotes, it's Amy Steigerwaite, a political science professor at Georgia State University, it's also one where the differences are incredibly stark between the two candidates, end quote. Warnock, who calls himself a, quote, pro-choice pastor, end quote, supports abortion rights. He has not said whether he backs any limits on abortion, drawing fire from conservatives and some in the religious community. Walker originally said he backed an absolute ban on abortion without exceptions for rape and incest or when the life of the mother is at stake. But during the campaign, he also expressed support for two measures that contain exceptions. Shows an inset picture of a demonstrator chanting with a megaphone July 3rd outside the state capitol in Atlanta, Georgia, as abortion rights supporters protest the U.S. Supreme Court's reversal of Roe v. Wade. It's time now for the obituaries. We only have two today, which is nice to hear, to be honest with you. First one from Sioux City, Michael P. Lennon, L-E-N-N-O-N. Michael P. Lennon, Sr., 85 years old, passed away Wednesday, November 23rd, 2022. Services tentatively will be on December 27th at 7 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. And from Lamars, Iowa, Bob McCrary, M-C-C-R-A-R-Y, Bob McCrary, 80 years old, of Lamars, passed away Thursday, November 24th. Arrangements are with Mauer Johnson Funeral Home in Lamar's. All right, we're going to move now to sports. On the front page of the sports section, about the NAIA playoffs, Dolinchek's status still uncertain. Mustangs face Kaiser in NAIA quarterfinals Saturday. This is by Dave Driesen and Dateline Sioux City. For the second straight week, Morningside University is preparing for an NAIA football playoff game, uncertain who will take snaps from center. Quarterback Joe Dolinchek, the school's all-time career passing leader, has missed the last three games due to an undisclosed injury. The most recent coming in last weekend's 35-18 win over Arizona Christian in the first round of the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics Football Championship Series. Dolinchek, a four-year starter, has practiced this week, but it will likely be a game-time decision as to whether he's ready to play Saturday in the quarterfinals against Kaiser, Florida head coach Steve Ryan said in an interview Wednesday. Against Kaiser, Florida, that's of course to head coach Steve Ryan, who he said in an interview Wednesday. Didn't come out very well. In eight games this season, Dolinchek has completed 179 of 250 passes, or 71.6%, for 2,935 yards and 35 touchdowns. The fifth-year senior has thrown just two interceptions. Freshman quarterback Luke Johansson, who started the last two regular season games, missed the Arizona Christian contest due to injury and has been ruled out for Saturday's game, Ryan said. Sophomores Cale Bird and Lennox Brown split time as the signal callers against Arizona Christian. Ryan said both players did well in their first meaningful snaps this season. Brown scampered for 67 yards on 10 attempts, including a touchdown. Lennox is a receiver playing quarterback, Ryan said. I thought he did a great job for us. Bird completed 4 of 13 passes for 31 yards, including an 11-yard TD to Zach Norton. He also threw an interception that Arizona Christian's Jalen Mitchell returned 6 yards for a score. Morningside running back Ryan Cole, named the offensive player of the game, carried the ball 44 times for 208 yards and 2 touchdowns with a long of 46 yards. Two-time defending champion Morningside, the top seed in this year's tournament, advanced to face number 12 seed Kaiser in a noon kickoff Saturday at Elwood Olsen Stadium. Kaiser upset previously unbeaten number 4 seed Bethel out of Tennessee 27-16 on last weekend. The Seahawks completed a furious comeback after trailing 17-7 during the fourth quarter, entering into the fourth quarter. Kaiser, 8-3, is 7-0 against NAIA opponents this season, with their only losses against Valdosta State University, number 2 ranked in NCAA Division II, Mississippi College, another NCAA Division II school, and Lindenwood University, an NCAA Division I FCS program. Ryan said Kaiser is, quote, big and physical up front, end quote, and also has a great deal of team speed. I think they have a fast football team, he said. We're going to need to respond and counter that. Kaiser quarterback Shea Spencer has completed 173 of 273 passes for 1,955 yards and 15 touchdowns this season. Marquez Burgess has rushed for 1,172 yards and 29 touchdowns, while Jaden Meisinger has carried the ball for 2,745 yards and 9 scores. In the win over Bethel, Spencer tossed 2 TDs and passed for 211 yards, and Jaden Meisinger ran for 166 yards. Kaiser has averaged 31.64 points scoring per game while giving up 19.64 points. Morningside has averaged 55.4 points per game while limiting its opponents to 14.7 points per game. The Mustangs have won 3 of the last 4 national championships, with Dolinchek starting as QB on the last 2 championship teams. Shows an inset picture of Morningside's Lennox Brown scoring a TD for the Mustangs in a first-round NAIA playoff game against Arizona Christian last Saturday. Brown, a wide receiver, stepped in to play quarterback with the Mustangs' top 2 signal callers out with injuries. Continuing with more NAIA football, Raiders and Knights to meet again. Northwestern edged Marion in 2021 NAIA quarterfinals. This is by Journal staff and Dateline Orange City. In a rematch from the quarterfinals of last season's NAIA playoffs, Northwestern College hosts Marion University on Saturday, with the winner landing a spot in the Final Four. Last season, the Red Raiders outlasted the Knights 25-20 in a back-and-forth contest that wasn't decided until the final 2 minutes. Northwestern scored what proved to be the game-winning TD on a Logan Meyer one-yard run with just over 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Marion drove deep into Northwestern's territory late in the game, but Red Raiders defensive backs sealed the win after an interception with an errant pass with a minute 24 left. Number 3-ranked Northwestern, 10-1, cruised in the opening round of the playoffs last weekend, 49-7, over number 17-ranked Dickinson State University out of North Dakota. The Red Raiders jumped out to a 35-0 lead against the Blue Hawks, scoring touchdowns on their first 5 offensive possessions. Sophomore quarterback Jalen Gramstad scored 3 of the Raiders' 4 rushing touchdowns, while senior receiver Cade Mosier grabbed 2 more scores. Number 7-ranked Marion, who are 9-1, blasted number 11-ranked St. Xavier out of Illinois 41-7 in the opening round last weekend. The Knights' Zach Bundelow tossed an FCS first-round high of 4 touchdowns, all to Ben Stevens, who totaled 157 yards receiving. Marion's defense also picked off SXU 4 times for a total of 66 yards on the returns. Northwestern's only loss was to Morningside in the first game of the season at 30-29. Since then, the Raiders have rattled off 10 straight wins, holding opponents to 10 points or less in each contest. In the first 11 games, Northwestern has outscored opponents 487-102. Gramstad has completed 128 of 183 passes for 1,807 yards and 15 touchdowns with 3 interceptions. The dual-threat QB also has rushed 94 times for 756 yards and 19 more scores. Junior Connor McQuillan has carried the ball 96 times for 595 yards and 9 touchdowns. Senior receiver Michael Story has caught 59 balls for 871 yards and 9 touchdowns, and Mosier has caught 31 passes for 500 yards and 7 scores. Marion's Bundelow has completed 154 of 226 passes for 2,214 yards and 22 touchdowns with 5 interceptions. Ben Stevens has rushed 65 times for 1,115 yards and 12 touchdowns. Northwestern is making its 24th appearance in the NAIA FCS, holding an all-time record of 27-21, that's .563. 2 seasons ago, Northwestern stunned top-ranked Morningside in the semifinals 44-41. The Raiders lost in the title game that year. Last season, the Raiders again advanced to the semifinals but lost a rematch with Morningside 28-19. Shows an inset picture on page C3 of Northwestern's Michael Story dodging away from Midland's Brandon Wright in Orange City. That's on November 5th. The Raiders host Marion, Indiana in the quarterfinals of the NAIA playoffs on Saturday today. Moving now, we're going to go to Dear Abby. And the first letter is from Undervalued in Nebraska. And it's titled, Wife is Second-Class Citizen in Her Own Home. Dear Abby, I have been married for 5 years. My husband and I are both past middle age and have been married before, me twice, 3 times for him. For much of our early marriage, my husband was ill. He required several surgeries and a lot of care. I never complained or felt burdened, yet the smallest ache or pain I have is, apparently, a pain for him. He has called me things he promised never to say. He makes excuses for not wanting to do things together. He spends upwards of 12 hours a day outside and seems to want to avoid me. He defends his friends when they say disrespectful things about me, citing the fact that he, quote, doesn't want to lose old friends, end quote. He believes that whatever is said by others, friends, family, etc., is my problem and I should just accept it. We have seen a marriage counselor and it has not helped us. Help me understand, please. Signed, Undervalued in Nebraska. Deer undervalued. From your description, your husband is selfish, self-centered, lacks the ability to empathize or nurture, and would rather allow his friends to disrespect the woman he married than confront them. What a prize! My question for you is, how long are you willing to tolerate being treated this way? Many women would prefer to be alone than living the life you are. You deserve better than what you have been getting, and I sincerely hope you will have the courage to go for it. Next letter is from Big Changes Happening. Dear Abby, my youngest son and his wife invited me to come live with them in Colorado. I am 68 and retired and was struggling to survive financially and physically and maintain my home in Washington State. It made sense to sell it and move into their spacious house with them. My son was laid off from his job and has been seeking employment. He received an offer from a company in Pennsylvania. I'm about to receive a large amount of cash from the sale of my home, more money than I've ever had at one time. My son came to me last evening and asked me to lend him all of it for a down payment on a house in Pennsylvania. He says he will pay it back once his house in Colorado sells. He figures it could take 6 months to pay it back. I believe he has my best interests at heart, but I'm hesitant to give him every penny. Am I being silly? He has never given me reason to doubt him. Signed, Big Changes Happening. Dear Changes, discuss the matter with an attorney right now, all in caps there. If you decide to give a portion of the money you receive from the sale of your home in Washington for a down payment on your son's home in Pennsylvania, you should have plenty left over for yourself. But whatever agreement you make should be a legal document, quote, or in all caps again, legal document in writing. It is not silly to want to protect yourself. In fact, it is very wise. Listen to your gut. Taking one last look at the weather today. I know this is a short one, and I'm sorry, but we just didn't have very much news in this paper today. But we'll wrap up with the weather now. Mild with high clouds. The forecast today, a high of 56 degrees. Winds south-southwest at 8 to 16 miles an hour. Breezy tonight, increasing clouds. Low down to 29. Winds out of the north at 10 to 20. Those winds moving out of the northwest, 10 to 20 tomorrow. Sunny, breezy, a bit cooler, a high of 44 degrees for tomorrow under those winds. And then Sunday night, clear skies, low down to 22. Breezy in the morning, then partly sunny in the afternoon, a high on Monday of 53. Winds south at 8 to 16 miles an hour. Mostly cloudy Monday night, low of 33. And then cloudy, windy, and colder on Tuesday, a high of 35. Winds north-northwest at 15 to 25 miles per hour. Cloudy skies on Tuesday night, low of 17. Cooler, and then clouds and sun mixed together, high of 29 degrees for Wednesday. Winds north-northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. That does it for the reading of the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, November 26, 2022. For the last, well, not quite an hour, the stories have been selected and read by me, John Reef. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions, you can call IRIS toll-free at 877-404-4747. We thank you for listening to IRIS, your radio reading service.